Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, it's me, Richard Herring, with another Rahulastapar this week with the brilliant Maisie Adam. Not Maisie Adams. Only say that if you want to make her silently furious. Now, look, I've got a new book coming out in November. It's called The Problem with Men, When's International Men's Day and Why It Matters. Or all the initial letters of that in an acronym, if you want, for short. You can already order it, and I believe the audiobook as well, which I will be doing myself, at Amazon, at Waterstones, all the usual places, motherfuckers. Go and pre-order it. It would be lovely if it was a success. I think it's a nice book and has some interesting things to say, but mainly it's pretty funny. Also, it's quite short, so I think if you're a parent like me, that's an advantage. You can read it pretty quickly. My radio show sitcom Relativity is currently on Radio 4, and you can catch up with that on BBC Sounds and illegally catch up on the first couple of series online if you are smart. Or if you just look in my blog for the link. Also, remember, gofasterstrike.com/badges if you want to become a monthly badger. Remember, if you enjoy this Twitch stuff, there's all kinds of things going on in Twitch, including on Thursdays, usually, Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun. Well worth your time. There's lots of snooker going on. twitch.tv/rkherring. And if you're with Amazon Prime, you can give us some money every month for nothing, if you would like, by linking your accounts and then subscribing. You can give it your money to us, but please give it to someone on Twitch if you don't give it to us. Because it's crazy. There's free money, a big vat of free money, and it's all Ian Amazon's. And let's take some of it off him because he's got enough. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahulastapar with Maisie Adam. Hello! Please welcome a man who's been imagining drones in a field. It's Richard Herring. Hello, it's me. Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Loopy Snooker Thorn podcast. I thought I'd name it in honour of Willie Thorne, who sadly died today. I know he played two-player snooker, which is not something I approve of, but I think in his heart he was a self-playing snookerist, and Definitely one of the funniest snooker players. So I'm very sad to see him go. Though I was hanging around with Daniel Rashford earlier today. I love old football, me, for kicking stuff around with the footballs. Old Daniel Rashford, he's one of the good players, isn't he? I love him. He calls it realistic, but anyway, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. Some people are watching this live. Hello to you. Love to see you all here. Thank you for shouting out. Some of you will be consuming this podcast in about 8 weeks after we've recorded it. So you can probably work out which day we recorded it on from my topical, hilarious topical humor. But also, I'm just wondering, you know, where the world is. I'm going to make a prediction. You're in the second week of the second lockdown. That's my prediction. Let's see if it comes true. I hope you're not. But the way people are acting at the moment, we've sort of been semi-let out. You may remember at this point, we can go to the shops. We're going to do various things. People aren't. I went to the supermarket yesterday. No one's wearing masks. No one's really isolating properly. Everyone's gone a bit crazy. It hasn't gone away. It's still there. The virus is still there. Until there's a cure, we're screwed. Anyway, we've all got to get it. We might have had it. Let's hope so. The other thing that's been happening to this as we speak is people have been doing that face app thing again, changing their gender. William Shatner as Kirk was turned into a very attractive woman. Someone's done it for me today, and that's me. That's me as a lady. It's quite nice, I think. I think it looks a little bit like my wife. Others have said it looks a bit like Julia Swala, who's one of my previous girlfriends. So either is slightly worrying. The question I want to ask, I quite fancy myself, obviously, and is it cheating to have sex with yourself with your gender swap? That is the question I would ask for you. I mean, it would only be masturbation with a sort of clone version of yourself. Look at that, pretty nice, eh? I wouldn't say no. I'm a hot piece of ass. I don't want to sexually objectify myself, but as a woman, I'm pretty good looking. I think that's what it does, though. It just makes all men look quite good as women, which not necessarily the other way around. They did The Cabinet, and I thought Dominic Raab was the surprise standout for me as a woman. But there we go. What else is going on? Not a lot. Let me tell you about what's going on. This is my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/RKHerring. In lockdown, we're recording these every Wednesday, so come and check it out next Wednesday if we're still doing them. I'm also doing other various things like stone clearing and playing snooker against myself. I'm going to flip it around and try some different stuff as well, doing film commentaries. You can subscribe on Twitch. If you're with Amazon Prime, you can actually give us £5 every month without spending any actual of your own money. It's insane. If you go to my YouTube channel, Herring1967, there is a video that explains that. Or why not become a monthly badger if you want to spend money? You can, you'll get like a lovely membership bad thing that you can keep your Oyster card in this if you had an Oyster card, if they hadn't become sort of defunct. You get badges, you get a little membership pack with a code, you get access to all the backstage interviews and all sorts of lovely stuff. So why not do that? Thanks for all the support you've been giving us during these difficult days of lockdown. Let me introduce my guest this week. Just check I've said everything I was meant to say. Yes, I probably have. She is probably best known for her appearance on The Chase, not The Chase Celebrities, whatever that one's called, The Actual Chase. She was on the proper one. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Maisie Adam. Here she is. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. I knew it. I knew that would be my intro. I knew it.
It's very exciting. How did you get on in The Chase?
Oh, like you don't know, Richard. Like you don't know. But since you ask, I was the only contestant to take the lower offer. What was the lower offer, I hear you ask? -£300.
What?
-£300. And I was against Paul Sinner, comic.
Yeah.
But this was all before I started stand-up comedy. So I was a student at university. Took -300 and still didn't make my way back. Lost it.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, I'll give you the question that I got, if that's okay.
Yeah,
what bird is on the national flag of Ecuador? Is it A, a toucan, B, a pelican, or C, a condor? Remember, -£300 at stake here, Richard.
That's a hard question. I am actually going on The Chase myself quite soon.
Well,
I am going to say, I think it's either a toucan or a pelican. I think it's got to be one of those. I'm going to say pelican because I think toucan's too stupid.
Richard, you have made my day because the answer was condor.
Oh, was it?
See, it's harder. It's harder than you think.
It is very hard. I'm not so particularly looking forward. Well, I am looking forward to doing it. So did they win the money, the remaining three?
No, they didn't. And it's the worst thing I've ever done, but I let out a little squeal when they lost because up until that point, I was the only person who wasn't going to win their share of 52 grand.
Yeah.
So, which when I was a broke student was like, you know, the ultimate, it would have been like a lottery win, and they didn't get it. And we had to all get the train back together, and I was like, oh, commiserations, guys. But inside I was like, thank God.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I'm looking forward to going on. It's been nudged. I meant to have done it already. It was meant to be in April, but the coronavirus I was going to have a great year this year. I was going to be on The Chase. I was doing another TV thing. I was doing also, and then it came. And I think I'm the biggest victim of the
coronavirus. Yeah, definitely.
I think I'm the.
It's hit you hardest. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's been terrible.
A cancelled episode of The Chase. You must be beside yourself.
It's awful. It is. And I've had to spend a lot of time with my kids, and that is.
Oh,
terrible,
it just gets worse.
Terrible, terrible punishment. So I was often with newer comedians, and you're a newer comedian.
I am.
It's taken them sort of, they're new, but they've been going for about 10 years. You've done very well very, very quickly. You've only been doing stand-up for, what, four years?
Yeah, just coming up to four. Yeah, it'll be 4 years in October.
That's a pretty impressive rise. Your first gig, which I'm interested in, I mean, you'd been to drama school. We might talk about that later. Yeah. But your first gig was at the Ilkley Fringe.
Yeah, the Ilkley
Which is
Fringe.
Kind of an unusual first gig.
It is. So I lived in a village up in North Yorkshire that was kind of, there wasn't a lot of comedy going around. And so I guess most of my friends who are also coming up in comedy now started on the London scene where there's, a gig every night 5 minutes from your house. There was no gigs where I was, and I couldn't work out how to get into it. But Ilkley Literature Festival, Ilkley's sort of a 20-minute drive from where I was living. And as you said, I'd just finished drama school, didn't have an agent. There was no way of even being creative. I was working in a mobile van in Millennium Square in Leeds, and there was a bar. And Ilkley Literature Festival put a fringe on. And they asked for local artists, and you could come and do anything. It was like, you can do spoken word, you can do dance, you can do poetry. So I said, I filled in the little application, said stand-up comedy. And they came back and said, yeah, here's your slot. And it was an hour on Thursday, the 13th of October. And I thought that was really normal, because when you go see comedy, you know, when you go and see someone come to Leeds Town Hall, it's an hour long. When you watch comedy on Netflix, it's an hour long. So I was like, brilliant. So I wrote what I thought was funny for an hour. I mean, I watch it back now, and it's a strong 10 spread over 55 minutes. But that was my first gig, and there was no compere, nothing else. And I made my own flyers, and it was free, and I just loved it. And my friend's dad had a good camera, and he filmed it for me. And I sent it then to every promoter that I could find on Facebook. And normally they'd come back, you know, saying, can I have a gig? And they'd go, well, do you have 10 minutes? And I thought I was dead good. I've got an hour. I've got an hour. Enjoy this. And then I just started getting into it from that, really.
Sure. I mean, I guess having done acting, there's a, you know, you're used to being on stage, but that's still.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's like, daunting enough doing your first. I mean, I suppose when you don't know, you don't know.
Yes.
But when you do the first performance of a new show.
Yeah,
that's sort of a terrifying time.
Sure.
Of,
and I do. In fact, the more I've gone on, as you say, it's still like not exactly a long illustrious career. It's 4 years in, but I do kind of still wish I had a lot of that naivety of just going straight in and doing it and not overthinking or worrying. Because I think now, if it had been the other way and I started with a 5 minute spot working up to 10, I'd have never progressed. I'd have been overthinking every single minute, whereas I thought, well, I've got an hour. If I'm not funny in the first 5 minutes, I can be funny in the next 50. So, which I don't think is a great way to be, but I do kind of, I have to remind myself that that's how it started, and to sort of be a bit more laid back with it. But you're right, I think having done acting, I was certainly comfortable on stage. And when I used to do acting, I was always in the funny roles, you know, the comedy roles. And I liked that because you got immediate feedback straight away. Your job was to say your line and people would laugh. Whereas if you're playing Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, you don't know if you're doing good until the very end, where people are either crying and standing up and applauding, or they're just sort of a bit unmoved.
Yeah. So they don't usually heckle Juliet.
No.
I haven't seen it.
If you're Juliet and you're being heckled, you're doing really bad. Really bad.
We are mortal enemies, by the way, because I'm also from Yorkshire, but I am from the East Riding of Yorkshire.
East Riding, it's not even, you don't even get called East Yorkshire, it's East Riding.
East Riding, and you're from the West Riding of Yorkshire.
We're
bitter enemies.
I'm actually like middle of nowhere, because it's technically North Yorkshire, but Leeds was the nearest place, so we're
According to Wikipedia, in the West Riding, it's called Panal, right, where you're from? Is that
Panal. Yeah.
Sorry, mate. It's a long time since I've been in Yorkshire.
Are you from? Pocklington, aren't you?
Pocklington, the East Riding of Yorkshire. Yeah. Pocklington.
Accent's gone, hasn't it?
It has gone a little bit. I did have a very broad, until I was about four, I had a very broad Yorkshire accent.
Oh, really?
And then I moved to Leicestershire, and then I moved to Somerset.
I can't imagine you with a broad Yorkshire accent. You'd have to be called Dickie Herring.
I found a tape of myself when I was about five or six, maybe when I was about 12 I'm so old. It was like a reel to reel tape recorder that I'd obviously found when I was a kid, and I'd record, you won't know any of these references, but I recorded myself singing the theme tune to Wait Till Your Father Gets Home, which was an unpopular cartoon when I was 4 years old. And it's your mum and your dad your sisters too. Yeah, really, really full on Yorkshire. But it's, you know, it's still there in my heart. It's still there in my heart.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
Not really. Mm. Were you ever in the Panal panto? That's the famous panto.
No,
that
I wasn't. I was never in this.
Why not?
Also, our pantomime was in February. So just to give you a little like insight into what sort of village I'm from, it's where the biggest event, is that on the Wikipedia page? All we've got going for us is a pantomime that we have 2 months after most pantomimes.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. Have you watched it though?
Been to it. And then often they're not often it'll be Snow White or Jack and the Beanstalk. I think the last one I saw it was Shrek.
Good. Well, I approve.
That's the sort of place we're talking about.
That is good. I've noticed this is way off in a different direction now. I meant to say this at the beginning, but I've noticed when you've been interviewed, a lot of people call you Maisie Adams with us on the end.
Oh, yes.
But you don't rise to it and correct them, I've noticed. Are you happy to be called Adams?
It's a difficult one. I have this a lot. I think maybe it's different because you've been around in the entertainment industry for a bit longer. So it's kind of it's a status thing. I don't feel, which is stupid. I hear myself say that and I go, it's your name. You should correct people on your name. But sometimes I feel like I just look like that rising star who's correcting someone who's been on the circuit for years, and I'm going, Adam, actually, not Adam. And I feel like they're just going to tell me to bugger off out the club. So I don't know. But you're right. I should correct on my name.
I was really tempted to do it on purpose all the way through this and see how long it took you to say anything.
The worst one is when I've gigged in, I went out to Montreal and they all introduced me as Macy. That literally makes my toes curl like that, is being called Macy, because it's I can cope with a pluralization of my last name, but Macy, I'm not a department store. It's just I can't stand it. No offense to anybody called Macy, obviously.
No, they will have taken offense. I don't think anyone called Macy is watching, possibly listening. I'll let you know.
Do let me know
when it all comes in. and what I quite like about you as well is I've looked at your Wikipedia page and it quotes, to prove your age, it quotes a tweet that you made when you were on your 18th birthday.
The idea
that you could be 18 and still on Twitter, obviously to me, is mind-blowing. You're on your 18th birthday, you tweeted, and this is
so
evidence of your age, had a mint birthday and drove to school like the pro driver I am.
No.
Hashtag 18, don't stop me now.
Oh, no.
That's on your Wikipedia page.
On my Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Driving to school like the pro I am.
Yeah. It's nice, but it's sort of... See, the thing, I'm so glad that social media and the internet... I mean, in ways, I wish the internet had been around when I was 18, but I'm so glad that all my juvenilia...
It comes back to bite you. It really
it's
does.
It's not there.
That's terrible. I took 7 times to pass my driving test.
And you still passed by the time you were 18. That's
pretty
impressive.
Yeah, I passed a week before my 18th. So I was clearly keen to get that out there into the world that I was driving before I was 18. Bloody hell.
Oh, that's nice. That's very nice.
Oh, that's mortifying.
There's no, on the Wikipedia page for panel, there is no famous people from panel. They don't put anyone on there. Is there anyone famous from there apart from yourself?
I don't think so. Unless Shrek was from there, and that's why they did the panto. Maybe Shrek the Ogre.
There's nearly always a famous person, so that's...
Oh, wow. Well, that's my next career goal. When people say, what next? Most comedians' answer is, oh, I don't know, Live at the Apollo, a Netflix special. I'd just quite like to be on the panel Wikipedia page. Yeah.
Even your school does it. You're a head girl at your school.
That's annoying. Somebody has told me that I'm not on my school's Wikipedia page.
Yeah, you're not
as
on school's
head girl.
Page.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't. They've disowned you.
That's fuming, isn't it? They still talk about this lad who used to play football for like Leeds United, but he left after injury, and then here I am. You know. Here I am. I've been on the chase. That's huge.
Yeah, you've
that's
been on. Huge. I mean, it should be the chase should have been enough. That was even before all the rest of it. I had a weird thing. I was listening to you on a podcast, on Rosie Jones's podcast.
Oh, yes.
Last weekend, I do a thing on Twitch where I watch bad films and do a commentary over them. And I did, and I was just thinking about this as I was listening to your podcast, and I did a commentary on the film White Chicks.
Oh, yes.
Partly to see whether, the people who were, well, partly to explain to people the difference between blackface and whiteface.
Because it's not the same, but a lot of people are convinced it is.
It's not the same. But also, White Chicks, as it turns out, race barely enters into it.
Yeah.
Race and sex, for a film that's about someone changing gender and race, there's very little to say about either of those things.
Yeah, you're right.
Apart from it being, I mean, it's not racist, but it's pretty sexist.
It's so bad.
But as a child, as a teenager, I'm guessing, you learnt the dance from White Chicks to impress. So that was very weird because I was just thinking about it and then suddenly you start talking about White Chicks.
Oh, God.
And learning the dance to impress a boy.
So bad. It's so
it's really
bad.
Sad.
So bad. I mean, when I think of the stuff, like, I pretended to like the music of, I can't even remember his name. He was a rapper. And it like really, really Dappy from N-Dubs, that's it. And I pretended to be really into Dappy as well. I mean, that could be a podcast in itself. Stupid shit I've done in order to impress a boy. The dance from White Chicks was a particularly bleak one, I think.
So were you? Did you learn the it's tricky that the Wayans brothers danced?
At the end of school, when like the teacher can't be asked to do a lesson. This lad had brought it, and everybody could bring in a DVD, and you'd have to pitch as to why your DVD should be watched in the lesson. This lad brought in White Chicks and said it was the funniest film in the world and everybody should see it. And so eventually everybody, and he was quite popular and quite good looking, so we all voted for it. And we watched it. I probably laughed twice as hard as what it merited. And we were all going out dancing that weekend, going out dancing. I said that like I was a pensioner. Going out to the club and I learned this It's Tricky dance and then like sort of met him on the dance floor and was showing him that It's Tricky move. And oh my God, I think a bit back now and I just it makes me want to be sick.
It's very sweet and lovely you did it and then he was unimpressed.
He barely even sort of acknowledged it. He was like, oh right, okay, yeah.
Dear.
Yeah, it was bleak. It's so sad. It's so sad.
Well, if White Chicks was his favourite film, you're better off without him. I have to
Absolutely.
Tell you if that's his idea.
I don't think I realised I had such a tragic life up until this point, until I came on this podcast. And I realised I lost money on the chase. I learned a dance to impress a boy. I took 7 times to pass my test and I've never been in the Village Panto.
I'm just here to undermine the new comedians until they make them give up because you're just, you know, you're going to take my jobs. You come over here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Come over here. Take it from the West Riding of Yorkshire.
Yeah.
It's very problematic. There's a bit where, I mean, Terry Crews is actually very funny in the film and he's the only funny thing in the film. But there's a bit where one of the other guys gives him basically a roofie to put in the Wayan brothers who's just drink. And he kind of goes, and all he says is, will this definitely work? I think there's no, is this morally correct?
It's so bad. I did Brett Goldstein's podcast recently, For Him to Be Buried With. Yeah. And one of them was like, what was the funniest film when you were sort of in your, you know, what was the film that made you really laugh?
Yeah.
And this answer was true, but I'm kind of ashamed of it. It was super bad. And we watched it recently. Me and my boyfriend rewatched it because we remember it being, and it's such a quotable film, even to this day, he's still quoting it. We watched it back and we were like, the plot of this story is essentially two lads want to get girls so drunk that they can lose their virginity before they go to college. And the only way that they think they can lose their virginity is to get a girl so blackout drunk at a party. Like, it's so bad.
So many of these things are so recent. That's the thing. It's incredible how quickly the moral compass has shifted on that. Because I was talking the other week about How I Met Your Mother, which is basically all the main character in that is essentially a date rapist and who wants to have sex with girls and then dumps them in horrible ways, but also is tricking them into bed and filming them
without their knowledge.
And it's all a joke, and that's finished in something like 2016. It's so recent. And so it's sort of amazing the way we're obviously at the moment. It's a lot about racial comedy that's kind of hitting the headlines, but you know, all these people are apologizing about that from 2012 or whatever.
Yeah, the pace at which it's changed is so quicker in the last few years than it has. During lockdown, we've started to rewatch all of the James Bond films. And so we only started this last week or week before. So we've just finished the early Sean Connery ones. And they're pretty sexist. They're pretty bad. But at least you can go, well, it was 1962. Whereas you look at something like White Chicks How I Met Your Mother or Superbad, and you're thinking, this was in the last 10 years. Like, it's so bad. It's so bad.
But comedy goes through these. I mean, it goes back and forth. I mean, hopefully not too far back. And, you know, but obviously when the 70s went to the end, the stuff I grew up on, the stuff was on TV in the 70s, was properly just full on racist. Comedians on TV were using all the words and all the stereotypical jokes.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely fine. And then obviously alternative comedy changed that somewhat. But then, you know, sort of not as well. It's just, I sort of feel like in the early 2000s, like a lot of people felt, oh, we've sorted out sexism, racism. Now we're allowed to go back to it. And I think that's, and because we clearly haven't.
Yeah, it was one step forward, two steps back. Yeah.
And in hindsight, it seems bewildering. I find it bewildering anyone would do blackface, although would do blackface at all. But it's like when it becomes, there's a grey area in it, I suppose, when it's League of Gentlemen or where somebody's using blackface in a sketch to deliberately be offensive in order to discuss the issues around it.
Yes.
The problem is when censorship comes into it, it just is, they've got something black on their face and therefore that is blackface.
We watched a film recently. I think it's Ben Stiller, Tropic Thunder. And Robert Downey Jr. blacks up in that. But his character is a dickhead method actor who thinks, I'm going to be playing a black person, so therefore I've got to, you know, I'm going to black up to learn how to be black. And the whole joke is, well, you shouldn't be cast in the first place. That's the joke. Yeah. So you're right.
There's no, when we did, weirdly, when we were releasing the Fist of Fun DVDs, 10, 15 years after we'd done our TV series with Stuart, and they suddenly got, it was all around Andrew Sachs, Russell Brand kind of time, and they suddenly got really worried about stuff. And then you just sort of see they've got a list of things that you're not supposed to do, and there's no way of applying it. And they came back and told us certain things are absolutely impossible. There was no way they could go out. We had a sketch about teachers where where Stu's teacher was basically flirting with, you know, the girls in the class and being inappropriate with them. And they came back and said, well, obviously this can't go out because in that week, we were having the discussion, someone had been off, that teacher had taken a girl off to France or something.
I remember that.
But you know, that was the week we were having the discussion. That wasn't the week it was coming out. No. So it was a DVD. It wasn't coming out for another 7 or 8 months.
It's a fun
and you
one.
Can't, you know, and so that would be forgotten, but also there yeah. was, things would. And so, like, some often when you get a censor who's just got a list of that, and that's where you can get, I guess, with some of our shows we do on TV, we got round so much by just not using the language that was on their list.
Yeah.
But we would say things that were actually much more offensive, but because they weren't on their list, they were expressed in a different way.
Yeah.
You'd get away with it. But yeah, it's interesting. And I guess, you know, it was very weird watching. I'd never seen White Chicks. I'd seen Little yeah. Man, which is another very offensive film.
Yeah.
Towards,
yeah, I remember that one as well.
But yeah. It's sort of historical documents, but I guess nobody is saying we have to burn all the DVDs.
No,
just
no. The outrage that's come from sort of taking like Little Britain off and stuff. It,
yeah.
The outrage is a bit ridiculous. You're like, well, no, that shouldn't be okay. Like, you know, I think it's the right thing to take them off and go that was wrong then, so it's wrong now. Yeah. And the people that are kicking off about it, I don't really like. If you're that bothered about it, go to HMV and get the DVD. Like,
I think especially the people who are kicking off about Come Fly With Me, which I don't think anyone enjoyed at the time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's not, it just, it was a bit of a dab squib and then it disappeared.
It's such a strange thing.
We can't watch Come Fly With Me anymore.
It's really baffling to think that there is a group of people out there who are devastated at the fact that Come Fly With Me is not on anymore.
Oh, dear. So, we'll ask you an emergency question. Oh, no, I'll talk. First of all, I saw you in this and you were great. This is, I think, before I even knew you were a comedian. You were in the Urban Myths.
Oh, yeah.
The Sex Pistols versus Bill Grundy playing Susie Sue.
Yeah. So that was my first acting role out of drama school. My only one, I should add as well.
Was that before you were a stand up?
Yeah.
Was that? Yeah.
Yeah. That was before I was a stand up. And I think it was around that time that we were filming it that I was like, this is amazing to be acting. But jobs like this come up, you know, so rarely. Most of my friends who'd come out of drama school didn't have any work. And if they did, they were the extra in the background of a 10-second advert that only went out, you know, online. It was really, sure. You know, very, very select work. And then I got this role of being Susie Sue, which is like, as first acting roles get, that's pretty cool. And my mum's a punk, so right. I grew up knowing about this incident, the Bill Grundy interview.
Yeah.
And I grew up around all of this music and I couldn't believe I got, because I didn't think I looked anything like her. But they put this big peroxide blonde wig on and everything.
Yeah.
it was so much fun, and we had to watch the interview over and over and over and over again to get it verbatim, and Steve Pemberton was Bill Grundy.
That's right, yeah.
And so it was really special to do, yeah, and it was nice being around Kieran Hodgson, who's a comic. He was Malcolm McLaren in that as well. So it was nice to be around comic actors, and I think I sort of realised like this is fun, but it's me reading lines that have been put down, and I'm playing somebody. Whereas what these guys do when they're not doing this, i.e., comedy, that's there's so much more freedom in that. And I remember being, it was around that time that I thought, this acting's good, but what I'm doing now comes up so rarely. Maybe comedy is something to consider. And then the bright lights of Ilkley beckoned.
Well, it's great. I really like that Urban Myths series. It's quite a rare thing where it's a standalone. I mean, they're all the same idea of possibly true, possibly not true things with celebrities, but it's a standalone thing each week. And so some of them aren't as good as others. But, that was a particularly enjoyable one. You were very good in that.
Thank you. Cheers.
Let me ask you my new emergency question based on this face swap thing. I often ask about what is considered cheating in a relationship. Would you consider it to be cheating to sleep with a gender-reverse version of yourself? If you were in a relationship and you had sex with the male version of yourself that had been, it's been clone created, so it's a clone of you, the male version of you.
I've seen the male version of me. I've put this thing on before, and I, like you, I am like fit. I didn't expect it. I think I was expecting just sort of this with a beard or something, but it's not. Like, my jawline was different. I was absolutely gorgeous. And the first thing I said to Mike, my boyfriend, I just showed him, I said, if he existed, I would bang him. I would bang him. And I'd be honest about it. I'd be very open about it. And I think, frankly, if he didn't understand, that was more of a reflection on him than me.
Good. I'm glad. I was really fit. Yeah. I mean, I think that my one is also, they, you know, it's 30 years younger than me, I would say. Yeah. So that makes it much easier to find attractive. But there we go. How are you finding lockdown? Are you, I asked you on to the to the theatre, and you were going off to Melbourne and Adelaide, weren't you?
Did you
get to Australia?
Did Adelaide. And then I was meant to fly back in the week between anyway, to film QI, and which I did. And then they just said, don't bother coming back out because Melbourne's cancelled. Just did Adelaide and then did an episode of QI. And by that point, we were allowed to go to the studio to film it, but no audience. And I'd never been on QI before. This episode hasn't gone out when we record this. It's still not gone out. But there was no audience. It was just the hair and makeup lady, a couple of runners in a 400-seater studio, and Sandy Toksvig's wife. So it wasn't dissimilar to my Ilkley gig, I'll be honest.
But well, that's cool. I'm glad you got to do Adelaide because it was. I know a lot of people were. Yeah, do you have a good time?
Yeah.
I've done that. It wasn't an official festival year, but I did Adelaide. There was a comedy festival in Adelaide in something like 97.
Yeah.
So I know Adelaide really well. I did it. Yeah, it's a
really
it's a
lovely
cool
place. Yeah, really, really nice. So, and hopefully I'll get to go to Melbourne at some point. So,
and were you planning doing Edinburgh this year? Was that on the cards? Or
yeah,
that
it, was. It was. Yeah. It was. So it would have been my third Edinburgh. It's difficult because there was this weird time where Melbourne had been cancelled and pretty much all of the gigs that we used for previews in the run-up to Edinburgh were cancelled. You know, all of these preview festivals that go on in May, like Brighton Fringe, that was cancelled. And then Edinburgh was still in. And I was like, we're going to be going up to Edinburgh with a show that we've not ever done. Again, it would be like Ilkley.
It would be Ilkley. Yeah. You'd be the only person who'd dwell.
It's like, I've done this before, guys, honestly. Don't worry. No, but I was really sort of nervous about it. And then when the Olympics got pulled, I thought, there's no way they're pulling an event that people wait every 4 years for and train for 4 years for, and they're still going to put on something where you can go and see someone's comedy show above an Italian restaurant at 2 p.m. Like, that's not going to happen. So when Edinburgh was cancelled, it was obviously quite sad, but there was an element as well of like, well, I needed it to be cancelled because I didn't have it half as much of the preparation as normal.
It could have been, you know, there would definitely be people who had, you know, three quarters of a show together.
Yeah,
I guess,
people who didn't go in 2019 as well, yeah.
That's why I always start working on my show in June, and then that's why, then you're safe. That's what I always do.
That's really good advice, Richard.
It is, so from the future, just in case there's a virus. Every other year it's been a problem because it's not really enough time to write a show. But this year, no, I wasn't going to do a show. I wasn't going to do a stand-up show this year. I was going to do some podcasts up there. It's the Olympics is incredible, isn't it? Because so many people will have trained for that specific year, and next year they won't be at the peak of their fitness, or they'll be on the way down.
When you really think about the implication, it is massive. It's absolutely massive. Nice. Yeah, the pole vaulters have had it worse, definitely. You know who's come out worse of this pandemic? Pole vaulters.
That is pretty bad for them.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And how's lockdown been? You're in Brighton, are you?
In Brighton, and I'm with my boyfriend and my younger brother, which is an interesting dynamic.
That's two different people, right?
Yes. I know Yorkshire's okay. Got some rumours. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'd like to have it on the record that they're two different people. It's been so my brother's 21, and he works in like retail, and my boyfriend runs a bar, and I obviously do comedy, so none of us are like highly in demand right now. we were all sort of like, well, we're going to be the last ones to go back up. So which I always feel like I need to follow that sentence with which is obviously terrible because we really miss work and we just want to be back straight away. Honestly, we've got all the time in the world. Like every time Bryce comes on TV and he's like, it won't be for another few weeks. I was like, okay, that's fine. Okay, all right.
Well, a lot of people are kind of having fun, I think. I think it's obviously not great for lots
of
people.
This is the thing.
But...
I don't want to come across like I'm making light of it all, but it's important, I think, to remember that there's people who are having a really tough time with it all and it's really difficult for them. And that isn't the situation. We're very, very lucky. So it's kind of hard to be negative about it when I don't really feel like we have a right to be. Do you know what I mean?
No.
The most difficult aspect of it is sort of like having to live with your boyfriend and your brother and kind of navigate those relationships separately.
Yes.
It's sort of like, well, you know, I love you both very much, but in very different ways. The only thing they've got in common is they both had a bath with me, and they were very different types of bath. One was erotic, and the other one he shat in. So very different. Very different.
And we still don't know which was which.
That is the terrible habit my boyfriend's got there.
And so I presume your brother. Once now the lockdown is allowing lovers.
Yes, to what's they called?
The
support bubbles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, as soon as that was mentioned, that support bubble, he was straight out the door to his girlfriends. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. Support bubble reminded me of, do you remember that advert for like a incognito mode on a laptop? And advert showed this guy, and it was like, oh, it's for when you're looking for jewellery to buy your wife. And everybody was like, it's for porn. It's for porn. Yeah. When Boris was like, support bubbles for if you're lonely to be with another adult, we were like, it's a hookup.
Yeah. And he did sort of specify it had to be a loved one. So I think that's a dangerous thing to go and have your fuck buddy and go, oh, you're saying I'm a loved one now. So it could have created more problems.
I think the L-bomb will have been dropped a lot on Tinder recently.
But that's the thing. You know, if this had happened in the 1990s when I was single and there was really no internet or anything, the early 90s, there was no way of communicating with anyone. I think at least the internet is there in every regard for buying jewellery.
Buying jewellery. Yeah, it's the jewellery you'd be after.
So that would be a help. But, I just don't know how I would have coped with if you were literally on your own.
Yeah.
It's nice that you're in a little group there.
Yes.
But there are, I have talked to comics who've been basically alone for 3 months. Which, and I think, do you think as a comedian, not getting that stage time. A, you're obviously not going to be as good at comedy when you go back to you've lost a bit of practice.
Yeah.
But to not get the adrenaline rush and the endorphins of
being
approved of.
You realise how kind of narcissistic you are because of what your job role is. Like, I'll find myself telling a story in sort of a half offstage Maisie, half onstage Maisie way. And when it sort of just gets a titter from my boyfriend and brother, I sort of, storm out the room a little bit. Like how you storm out of a club that you died at, being like, oh, well, the crowd was shit. I sort of, go into the bathroom a little bit like, oh, well, they weren't ready for this. They weren't ready. They didn't get my stuff. They didn't get it. I've sort of had to reteach myself to just sort of have conversations and not try to get a little joke in here and there, And I don't think trying to do that all the time of trying to get a joke in and then just excusing it with I'm just trying to stay match fit. I don't think that makes yourself a particularly attractive flatmate to have.
No, I think that's true.
Someone who's always on.
Yeah. Well, I'm always trying to make my kids laugh, but they don't. My daughter's 5 and she's already outgrown anything I can do.
Tough crowd.
She's very tough. She won't laugh at it. I mean, deliberately. She deliberately. You can see I almost make her laugh, but she won't allow herself to laugh.
I thought I'd get till
she was 12.
Yeah, Mike will go, he'll just go, you're confident you can return to that industry, are you? Like, it's savage. How many plumbers are doing that? Fixing the toilet and their wife's going, well, you think you can return to that, do you?
And have you been doing online gigs?
So I think I've done just a couple.
Yeah.
And the ones that are sort of like an online quiz or a live stream chat, or a game of sort of would you rather, something with a structure, like this, it's fine. But it's the ones where they're like, just do stand up to the camera from your house. Just tell jokes into the camera. It'll be fine. And I thought, I'm not sure about that. And I buckled eventually and I did one. And it was essentially like this. So a Zoom chat, but the MC just sort of handed over to you and was like, off you go. And meanwhile, I could have it looked like an Excel spreadsheet of comments coming up.
Yes.
And I had to do 20 minutes. And I thought, well, I'll do, about 15 minutes of material. And then the last 5 I can fill with, Maureen from Kent says this. And I can have a bit of thing. And I don't know what went on with whoever was organising it, but the sound and the audio was just complete. The tech just went to shit. And so the only messages that were coming in as I was doing these jokes to camera were, I've got sound but no visual. I've got visual but no sound. The tech shit, I'm off. It was all like really, really savage. I won't be tuning in because I can't hear anything. That's the only stuff I had to go off. So normally if you do a gig in a club, the worst you're going to get is some drunk stag party shouting one thing at you and, you deal with it then. But when it's just a stream of messages saying that the tech is rubbish and there's nothing you can do on your end and you don't know whether to acknowledge them or carry on with your jokes. So the only interaction I was really having was going mid-joke, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? What about now? Oh, it's Maureen from Kent says I'm frozen. Do we know what to do about that? It was,
Yeah, I was offered I was offered to get the next up of doing, I think, through July, doing full sets, though, but it's 50-minute sets. I haven't actually done stand-up for more than, 10 minutes. I've done a few charity gigs in the last 18 months. I've just been doing this and I sort of stopped doing stand-up so I could tour this and not be away all the time. I thought, can I really have my first, will I be able to do 50 minutes? Can I remember 50 minutes of stuff? And can I do that to nobody, just to a camera? So I decided not to. I nearly did it just to force myself to do something. But then I just thought it's going to be too painful. And 50 minutes.
I'm doing that.
Are you?
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but at least you've been working. So you've got some stuff. But I'll just do Ilkley again.
That was 50
minutes. Yeah, I did that one. But I'd have to relearn everything. And
It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to go straight in with as you say, there's not many short, 20-minute things, those opportunities to do, 20 minutes of comedy. And then the next comedy thing I've got booked in that's just stand-up is this, and it's 50 minutes. Right. And you're thinking, well, I've not been on stage for 3 months, so I don't know,
It's going to be interesting. I think it'll be, It'll be good.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not, I think it's nice. I think there's lots of positives to take out of all. I don't know when we're going to be back, right? That's what I fear most. I think it's going to be, and probably another 6-7 months and maybe longer than that. And then if it's that long, I think a lot of things are going to fall by the wayside. But the clubs, and it's the clubs more than the comedians will survive somehow.
Yes.
By, you know, working in the sub, doing other jobs and whatever. But the clubs aren't there when we get back. If the theatres aren't there when we get back, if the art centres aren't there when we get back, then we've got nowhere to work. So that's the thing that sort of worries me about it. But also, I think if the clubs are clever, they will see the positives. You know, like the clubs that are broadcasting to the world at the moment, you can still do that with an audience, you know. And there's all these people who can't get to the Stand in Edinburgh on a Saturday night because they don't live in Edinburgh, and so you can show that around the world and sort of. Who knows how much
it's interesting, isn't it? I think what's his name? He used to be on Dragon's Den. Theo Pophetis was on saying that this whole pandemic has fast-forwarded the retail industry by about 5 years. And then I thought, well, that's probably the same across most industries, really. And I think probably with comedy as well, as a live industry, I imagine this has probably fast-forwarded so much in terms of people who usually prefer to go to clubs and because they don't like, you know, the Netflix original, that sort of manufactured thing. I don't know, people in the same way that people who prefer to go shopping on the high street rather than ASOS or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas now that's all that's been available. So they've had time to familiarise themselves with that format. I don't know, but I think hopefully we'll go back to clubs and stuff. But I also think there will be a huge sort of propellering of going towards online comedy being I'm going to say the phrase now and I hate myself for it, but the new normal.
Maybe, but you know, will the thing about the clubs and the thing that I think's been really, you know, why I got behind the Just the Heckle the Virus Just Giving campaign was you can't get to the stage where you're doing a Netflix special without doing the groundwork, where you're doing the clubs and working how to be a comedian. I mean, you can, but there are YouTube people who then do specials.
You're right.
But they're not comedians, and they're not.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and
it's
that's
not,
the thing
it'll
as well.
Be bad for comedy in the long run.
I was chatting to a musician friend, and he was saying, you know, all of these like arenas will still be there, huge festivals will still be there, but these little independent venues that nurture up and coming brands. Yeah. That's what will be detrimental to the music industry is that you won't have. How do you suddenly go from practicing in your mate's garage to playing an arena? You have to work your way up, and it's the same with comedy, I suppose, isn't it? You can't just suddenly be on a Netflix special or playing the Comedy Store in LA without having done all of these tinier venues and doing the groundwork.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interest. It'll be interesting to see how it
we'll
how
see.
It plays out.
We'll see. I had gigs booked in for June that they didn't happen. So
no.
we'll see.
Yeah.
see.
Anyway,
we'll see
I'll really
back.
Enjoy my anxiety dreams tonight. Yeah.
Let me ask you some emergency questions to take. I'll ask you this one off the top of my head.
Okay.
Who is the most famous person you've ever been in a lift with, but that you didn't get in the lift with? Someone you met in a lift that you've discovered in a lift.
Oh,
it's a difficult.
It's a really bad one. Like it's
who is it?
As in, like nasty. It's Nigel Farage.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. I'm so angry that that's my one. Like, can I just have it on the record that it was not out of choice?
Well, no, but that's the whole point of the question. So you're getting a lift, and Nigel Farage is in there.
Yeah, I was in the lift with Tom Lucy. It was at the Global Studios, and we were going up to do our podcast, and he's just quit, hasn't he? But he used to do his LBC chat show.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he was getting off at floor three and we were staying on to four, and I could tell Tom had noticed him, and Tom was laughing, and I was sort of doing this, you know, going, don't you dare, don't you dare. And Tom, I don't know if you know Tom Lucy, but he's one of those who can't resist making the situation awkward if there's an opportunity to. And so just as Nigel got out, Tom went, well, if anyone knows how to leave, you will. And I was, you know, when you're trying to push the doors together on the, I was just pressing the shut button really, really quickly. But yeah, oh, awful. Yeah.
That's good. I mean, he should get that everywhere he goes.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
That's the, I've been in a room. I've been in a room. I did a This Week, and he was on. I wasn't on with him, but he was I've been in a sketch with Nigel Farage because, you know, they do that awful sketch at the start of this week, and I didn't want to do it, and they made me do it, and I wouldn't dress up. But I actually, without knowing, answered something that Nigel Farage said. So I've actually performed with Nigel Farage in a sketch. And then he was in a room, and I just tried to ignore him. But there was this, you're obviously projecting, but it felt like this presence. And then after I'd finished, or maybe just after he'd finished, it was like after midnight in this building, and we were walking down a corridor, and I found myself walking down a dark corridor right behind Nigel Farage, and there was nobody else there. And, you know, A, it's creepy, and B, you know, there's a part of me going, but, you know, this is it. I could at least punch him in the face.
Yeah.
I could punch him, or I could make love with him if he was so inclined. I think, I didn't punch. It was one of the many opportunities I've failed to punch or harm a politician. But,
I'm so annoyed my answer is so... a bad person.
A good
I really wanted it to be a cool one.
It's a proper story. There's a punchline to it. I don't want to big myself up, but it's a brilliant question. and it's a brilliant emergency question. As long as people have, because some people go, no, I haven't.
Oh, yeah.
What about an escalator? No. Have you ever seen anyone famous? No. But it's the most famous person you've been in a lift with. That doesn't have to be someone who is famous. It's just the most famous. So,
yes.
You know, you can.
Yeah. It could have been one of the panel pantomime players.
Yeah, that's true. If you could have, if all the museum and art galleries in the world got together and said, we're going to give you one item you can take home and keep from all the museums and art galleries in the world, and you can have it and it's yours, which thing from an art gallery or a museum, so a piece of art or a historical artifact or whatever.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, what would you like? You can have it, it's yours.
I think I went to the university, the Museum of New Zealand in Wellington. And that was amazing. It's like seven different floors, and each floor is like a new era in New Zealand's history. And the further up you go, the further back in the history. So it's literally like going back in time. And there was a whole floor dedicated to the Maori culture, and they had this huge boat that they would go up down on the ravines on, and it was massive, and it had all of the like sort of scary looking figures on it. It was amazing, and it could probably fit like 40 people on. And it was handmade, hand carved and hand painted with specific paint referring to which tribe and everything. So it was really special. It was really specific. But also like just really badass. I'd rather have that than a car. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd have that, and then I'd tweet, I'm sailing to school in my Maori boat, like the pro sailor I am.
I know the kind of thing. I've watched Moana. It's the kind of thing in the boat.
That's it. It was sort of like that meets a Viking boat. It was long and narrow, but it was really cool. Really, really cool. Yeah, I'd have that
is a good choice. I appreciate that choice.
I don't think I live near any rivers. Oh, well, I'm in Brighton, so I can just take it out on the seafront. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a normal
good,
thing
and
to
I'll
do.
I'll do a random one for you. Before, when we did the backstage interview, every question I looked at was revolting.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see. This is a good question for me, because I've sort of been hallucinating on I go and collect, take stones off a field every morning. Don't worry about it. I'm 52 years old.
Is that what happens when you get to 52?
It is. It just all starts going wrong. But this week I saw, I'll tell you the question, then I'll give you my answer later. What is the most inexplicable thing you've ever seen in the sky?
It's the most inexplicable thing I've ever seen in the sky.
See, I'll tell you mine. Then this week, the most inexplicable thing in the sky I've seen this week. I was on, and I do a live stream of me moving stones, and it turns into this paranoid thing where I think I'm being watched and think I'm being hunted down by people who are against. It's a full on psychological drama about me trying to make something in my life by building a wall from stones that I find on a field, whilst thinking that people are trying to stop me doing it. It's an artistic piece in itself. But this Monday, I kind of looked up, and there was what I thought was a drone flying in the sky, like about 100 yards away. And it saw it out of the corner of my eye, but it looked like a biplane, it had propellers and stuff on it. And then it just fell into the ground, right, from quite high. I just went,
jeez.
And then I thought, did I, because I often hallucinate out on the field because I'm being weird. And I thought, did I see that or didn't I see that? And then I kind of got up the field and I went and had a look to see if it was there. And I found this black party balloon saying happy birthday on it that I kind of thought, well, was that? It was like Roswell, you know, Roswell, they saw aliens coming down and then they go, no, it was a weather balloon. And then they've got some shitty little bit tacked. And then I thought, well, that must have been it. And then the next day, someone online said, oh, we've lost our drone. Has anyone seen our 4-year-old's been playing with our drone? And they lived sort of just the other side of the field. And so then I even said, oh, look, I think I might have seen it. I thought I was going a bit crazy and I thought it was...
A four-year-old with a drone.
I think it might be in the field. And then I did that at night and I did the whole story. And then the morning went, it's all right, we found it.
Oh, no.
And so it wasn't them. So I just thought, so I don't, I still don't know if I saw, it would make sense it was a drone. It would make sense it was a drone that was flying by being piloted by a child and then just got out of range and just, fell to the ground.
Robbie Williams believes in UFOs, doesn't
he? Does.
Yeah. You've got a lot of that energy going on right now.
I don't think it's a UFO. I think it's a drone, but. You know, but then it wasn't there when I went to look for it. And so I was all geared up to go and try and find it on the field and be a hero. And then they went, no, we found it. And then that was it. They clearly think I'm crazy. I mean, if they didn't, they go,
oh, yeah, they definitely. They're definitely telling their kids to avoid that man.
Yeah.
I think the most alarming thing, I was once walking the dog. This would have been like when I was like about 14. Because it was when Raoul Moat was on the run.
Okay,
and he was
still,
everyone was saying, like, keep your eyes out for Raoul Moat, he's dangerous. Yeah, and I was walking the dog and I saw a helicopter fly over, and a helicopter didn't fly over where we live very often. And so I naturally jumped to the conclusion that Raoul Moat was in the woods where I was walking the dog and that helicopter was looking for them. So I stayed with the dog next to this tree trunk for like half an hour and was ringing my dad. And it was in the, like, it must have been about 14 because I was on my first ever mobile phone. And I was ringing him being like, Dad, have they found Raoul Moat yet? And he was like, what? What are you on about? I was like, have they found Raoul Moat yet? And he was like, no, why? I was like, because there's a helicopter above us and I think they might be looking for Raoul Moat. And my dad's quite a typical Yorkshireman. And he was like, that was bloody stupid. Get home right now. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it's, but the minute you start getting paranoid, then that night...
You can't get yourself out of it. Like, you convince yourself.
I took the dog for a walk that night and there was a really big rubber glove on the road outside our back gate and like a washing up glove, but like a really thick one and just one. And you kind of, how did that get there? There's no reason that could get, how did that get there? And then I kind of start, I heard, when I was just going to sleep, I heard a noise and I thought someone's downstairs. I went downstairs and then I started thinking they had that glove because they were going to smash the window.
You build a whole storyline.
Yeah.
You build a whole episode of Line of Duty around it.
So, you know, I'm definitely going mad. So I was looking at, I don't know where I got this from, but you've been obviously touring your various shows. You've done a couple of shows.
Yes.
So far, you were just about to work on your third. I noticed that you'd done, I think this is yours rather than mine. Yes, it is. I think you did a run of a tour where you went from Cambridge in the UK to Milan to Antwerp. Was that 3 nights in a row?
Yes, that was fun.
Yeah. How did that go? Because I've done gigs. I was trying to work out what mine was. There was one I did something like Hull, Paris, Milan, and Nottingham. It was something like that. It was just ridiculous.
It was crazy. But, I remember Cambridge I was really ill for. I got a really bad, like, to the point where you're doing your hour show and it's difficult for you to get through each line without coughing and spluttering. And it was that night that I had, like, my biggest reviewer in. I'd never had a national newspaper in and they were in. So I was just absolutely beside myself with, like, oh God, you know, of all days. And it didn't even end up that bad a review, but I was just like, just really running to the ground. And so I was back at the hotel for 10:30 with, you know, syrup, honey and lemon and all of this. Had to be on the flight to Milan the next day. But then I'm so Yorkshire because I'm like, well, I'm in Milan. I can't just sit in the hotel. I've got to see it. So I'm dragging myself around Milan to try and, like, take it all in whilst I'm ill. And then by the time I got to Antwerp, I was so tired. I feel bad for Belgium, but I couldn't tell you what Antwerp's like. I didn't go outside. That tour was mad. I also had Aberdeen one day, and then the next night was Bournemouth.
Just flying
the whole length of the UK.
And you get to a point, I mean, it just because the people who book the gigs often don't think about the journey, but there was one I got which was something like Plymouth to Norwich.
Oh.
And I worked out, even if I got up at 9:00 in the morning and drove and didn't stop,
Yeah.
I still couldn't guarantee I would make it there. No.
Everyone just assumes, like, because we're such a tiny island, oh, you can go anywhere, you know, you just this, though, that way.
Well, you sort of think Plymouth and Norwich, they're both in the bottom half of the country.
Yeah, literally, they're both south of Birmingham, it'll be fine. Have you heard that thing about the guy who was doing a double? He was an American act, and he was Dublin, and he thought Northampton and Southampton were, like, the same area, just north-south of the village, of the city. And obviously he finished his gig in Northampton, had a call from this bloke in Southampton, being like, where are you? And he was like, I'm on my way over right now. And he's like, well, where are you? I'm in Northampton. You're in where? I obviously went, bat.
It's very good. Well, thank God for those tour arrangers, whatever they're bloody called. They don't care about us. They hate us. Let's briefly talk. You don't have to talk about this for you because you've done a show about it, so I'm sure you're fine about it. But Vague was about you growing up with epilepsy.
Yeah.
Which my sister also, I think maybe it was the same thing. I'm a bit younger than my sister, so I don't know the full details, but she had sort of juvenile, you know, adolescent epilepsy, which I think is the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. So it kind of manifested itself in like about 14, 15 years old, and I started... I'd be in a conversation like with you now and my eyes would just sort of suddenly be doing that. And so my mum and dad thought I was rolling my eyes at them. So they thought I was being really rude and stuff. So they didn't really detect there was an issue. And so Vague was just about me growing up with all of the usual trials of youth and you know, house parties for the first time, festivals, going to Zante with your mates on a holiday where you're meant to be, you know, down in alcohol and on very little sleep. And both of those things are things you're not meant to do if you've got epilepsy. So it's, and I wasn't 100% honest with my parents growing up about it. You know, if I had a seizure, I wouldn't tell them. So we were all, up until I was about 22, we were all under the impression that I had a different thing to what was actually going on. So it's kind of about, it's kind of about that. Just because I saw it as a hindrance, and I saw it as something that might stop me from being able to do what all of my mates did.
Yeah, yeah.
And rather than address that head on, I just sort of pretended it wasn't happening, which is a stupidly dangerous thing to do.
But that's the weird thing, because it is a, you know, I remember when it was affecting my sister, she is the same sort of age, and my sister was, you know, was always wanting to be out and do stuff and was very active. And I know I don't remember much about it, but you know, she was really rebelling against it. And it's just the worst time for something like that 100%. To happen to. And it hits girls more than boys as well, doesn't it? I think
it's still something I have to manage a little bit now in terms of you have to have a certain amount of hours sleep. And with a job where you're often coming in at, you know, after 1-2 in the morning on the last train home, and then you might have to be on a writing job at 9 a.m. There's sometimes things that I've got to maybe juggle a bit more. And even now I feel like if I'd need to be back home by this time, I think, oh, people are just going, she wants to be home early or she wants to lie in tomorrow morning. It's like, no, I literally can't do my job if I don't do this. So, it was an interesting one. And then, you know what it's like when you do your first Edinburgh show, you feel like you've got to do a sort of self-introduction type show because no one knows who you are. But also you can't just do the generic, oh, I'm, you know, in my young 20s and I'm struggling to navigate adult life. And so it was kind of it was a generic story with a sort of its own twist on, I guess, like a specific.
No, I mean, no, it's experience. As a comedian, it's gold. It's a fantastic thing to have you as a comedian.
Yeah.
That's what we all dream of.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a treatable but still interesting condition to fall down on us that won't kill us, but
no,
will be enough
sure.
to...
And so many people, like, I'm sure your sister will have had this, but when people hear epilepsy, they immediately think, like, flashing lights and foaming at the mouth. And it wasn't any of that with me. It was just eye rolling and sort of occasionally going vacant and... coming round and just being like, oh, something's happened here, aren't there? Because, like, there's a smashed glass on the floor and I don't know what's happened for the last 10 minutes, so...
Yeah. It's good. I think it is things that, you know, I don't think I've seen anyone talk about that. And that was it was obviously a thing that concerned with our family. And I think that it's always good when comedy can talk about something. I've seen little clips of that show and you're giving people permission to laugh at the funny side of it as well as educating as well. So it's, you know, it's a, it's a, It's a great set. Is that the one that's on next up?
Yeah, it is. That's on the next up. I'm just going to turn this light on because I'm aware that I'm going incredibly into the... I look like I'm coming from a cave, so one second.
I like it because we suddenly got serious and, you know, we've... there we go. That's ruined it.
Hang on.
We're getting serious and it's suddenly going darker and darker. It's nice to see your little kitchenette, though.
That's as light as it gets here in the...
That's nice. I was just saying, it was very moody because we thought that we were sort of coming down... to a more serious topic.
When we go with the serious topics, we go dark and moody.
Let's lighten up and ask you a rude question instead. Well, that's...
Mood lighting, I think it's called. Mood lighting. Cool.
I'll ask you a couple of those questions, then I'll let you go. It'll all be good. It's all going to be good. Have you ever seen a ghost? That's what I would like to know from you.
No way.
You haven't seen, don't believe in them?
I don't believe
beforehand
in them.
You were talking about.
I don't believe in them, and I don't want to believe in them. So I feel like even if I saw what I thought in the back of my head was a ghost, I wouldn't allow myself to believe it. I'd tell myself over and over and over that there's a logical explanation for it. I can't stand the idea of one existing. The whole thing terrifies me. That whole hauntedness stuff. We've got
a crying baby in our house.
No, you see that? I hate. Are you in like the top room there?
We're in the attic now, and I think this is where the baby is in the attic.
Count me out.
This house used to be a doctor's, and then they built like a next door, which is like all the hospital rooms. And so they had like a mini hospital here in this house.
Why did you buy that house?
I didn't know that when I bought it. And also, I don't believe in ghosts.
I don't understand when people go for it. Like when we were in Adelaide, there's a big sort of group chat for all the comedians. And one of them was like, tonight, do you want to go around this dilapidated mental asylum? It's meant to be haunted. I thought, absolutely not. I'm going to go to the pub. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, it's fun. It's good fun to get.
I can't stand it.
The ghosts only come when we're back. Both me and my wife have heard the baby crying at the same time, and it's not our baby. And we've gone in, and it's not our baby.
But it's only
happened when we've been really, really tired as well. So I think when you're a new parent, you're really tired. Any sound would sound like a baby.
I can't stand this.
It's happened a lot.
No.
The next door neighbours don't have a baby.
Oh, no. Honestly, this is horrific. This kind of looks like, with this Zoom call, it looks like it could be another Paranormal Activity film, doesn't it? Like, any minute now, some figure's going to appear behind me or something.
It could. I'll let you know if that happens.
Don't you dare. Stop it. I feel like I've got to keep looking.
It might be your brother. It might be fine. He might just walk in.
Oh, God.
All right. Let me see what I've got for you. What is the worst thing that's ever happened to you when you've been kissing?
So the worst kiss ever of my life. Yeah. I don't know if it's just worst thing happening. It's just the worst kiss of my life.
Okay, that's fine.
And it was on the dance floor of a nightclub again. His tongue must have been genuinely like a sort of newt or a salamander because it was so thin and so long. And he just shot it to the back. I was about 17 years old. And his actual technique must have just been like... straight, and it was like right at the back.
Yes, I've experienced the.
It was
not for the same guy.
To the point where I gipped, and I pulled away because I was going like that, and it was it probably was helped by the fact that I'd been drinking a lot that night, so anything going there was probably going to aggravate it. But it was awful, really, really bad. To the point where he tried to add me on Facebook the next morning. And I saw his profile picture and just thought, that's the bloke with the long tongue. Absolutely
right,
not.
Yeah,
and
no.
Declined.
It's a difficult thing because you don't, if someone kisses badly, who tells them? Because I've had that. I've had the exact same thing where someone's just basically placed their entire tongue it's like a slab of meat in your mouth. It's not even moving. It's just there. And it's just there constantly. It's not.
And then
darting.
You start thinking, well, they clearly don't know that.
Yeah, so, they don't know. No one's told them.
But I don't. I've never had any. So I could be.
Exactly.
I could be that person to somebody else. Maybe somewhere else. There's somebody going, oh, I snugged this girl and she didn't put enough tongue in. I don't know.
She didn't put her entire tongue in my mouth.
I don't know. Nobody actually. I mean, sometimes I'm sure people have been told that they're a good kisser. But nobody's ever.
Believe me.
Very few people have been told that they're bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never told someone.
And you probably would still tell a good. It's rude, isn't it? You don't go. You know, you don't tell someone they're kissing badly. You're not allowed to do it.
God.
But you'd probably go, "Oh, you're a good. Yeah, you're a good kisser. I'm moving to Australia. I can never see you again.
It's so hard.
My answer was that someone's been sick.
Someone's been sick in your mouth. Yeah.
The other person was sick. I can't remember this, but I obviously remember I wrote this book.
Maybe you are bad at kissing. That's what brought it up.
Maybe someone was sick in my mouth and then, but we carried on kissing.
Richard, that's gross.
After I swilled, swilled it out.
That's vile. Even the smell of it is enough to make you want to leave a room.
Got to carry on.
Well, fair play. You commit. Were you like, this will show that I'm not afraid of commitment? That I will take someone at their worst and their best?
Okay. Well, look, we know you've got this thing coming up for next up in July.
I believe 15th of July is when I'm up.
So that's for the people who are watching live. This may go out after the 15th.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. So,
do you have any plans for the future? Do you have QIs coming up?
Richard, our job is illegal. We've got no plans. Yeah, the QI episode will be out at some point. And hopefully I'll do a couple more. I'm always doing something like a live stream quiz or whatever. But as you say, we might have been wiped out as a human species by the time this goes out. This might just be what people watch to learn what the human race was like. Yeah, and they'll take from it, bad kissers. Bad kissers who believed in ghosts.
Yeah,
that
could well be. Well, it's been lovely talking to you. I very much enjoyed watching you on. We recorded Roast Battle at the same time, which you were great on.
That was good, wasn't it? That was good.
It was a lot of fun. So you can catch that somewhere if you want to catch that. You've been on Have I Got News for You and QI.
It's all happening.
And then the coronavirus came and destroyed your career.
I know. I'll have to build myself back up from the panel pantomime.
Will. It's an incredible rise, very rapid rise. You won the So You Think You're Funny, did it? Was it So You Think You're Funny?
Yeah, 2017. Yeah.
Very quick. So that's, I'm very impressed with the way things are going. You're very funny. Check out Maisie Adams's.
You bastard.
Special on Next Up Comedy, which is always worth a look. The people at Next Up are fantastic. And
you can find my episode, The Chase, I'm sure, if you fancy.
We'll look for you on The Chase.
I'd say that's funnier than a lot of my stand-up.
I'm going to go for the highest amount of money possible.
That's the one regret I don't have, because you'd rather go out looking like you're being ambitious than go out looking like you've taken the safe bet and still been shit.
I mean,
shit.
If you'd got through and taken money off them and they'd won and then they were just looking there, I could have had another 75 quid.
The woman before me took the higher offer and she brought back 45 grand and I was going to have the cheek to come and sit next to her having taken 300 quid off that.
No, it's good. I admire you for that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Maisie Adam.
Thank you so much, Rich. Cheers.
See you again next week. We've got Nathan Caton next week. See you then. Bye-bye. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Maisie Adam. Thank you very much, as always, to Pest. This music is delightful and I'm jigging around now as I listen to it. Oh yeah, baby, that's how I like to dance. Thank you as always to the wonderful Chris Evans, who provided me with invaluable technical assistance to make sure this thing happens. Thank you to Acast for doing the podcasts. Thank you to British Comedy Guide for all the help they have given me over the years. Thank you to Rob Sedgebeer, Steve McNeil, who also very much helped me with Twitch and much more than that as well. I'm indebted to my producer, Scott McEachin. We called him Scott McPeachbum backstage. It got into a lot of trouble. It was considered sexual harassment. He sued us for an awful lot of money. Me and Maisie Adam got into a lot of trouble that day, I can tell you. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not head to GoFasterStripe.com, buy some books, buy some downloads, buy some DVDs if you live in the 1980s. And they weren't around then. And also you can get my Trump cards, and you can become a monthly badger. GoFasterStrike.com/badges. Check us out on twitch.tv/RKHerring. All of this stuff is free and live and exciting. I hope you will check us out one of these fine days, my fine, fine friend. Good riddance to you all.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStrike.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.